Welcome to Season 2 of Inflammation Nation. My name is Peter Boyd. Inflammation Nation is a podcast from Arthritis Ireland aimed at increasing awareness and understanding of arthritis and related conditions. And so you're very welcome to this latest episode of Inflammation Nation. I'm joined by Jane Brownlee, who is a Senior Occupational Therapist in Rheumatology Service in Nace General Hospital. Jane, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined by Anna O'Leary, who's a retired social worker, who is one of our helpline volunteers in Arthritis Ireland. Anna, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Peter.
I suppose if I could start with yourself, Anna, you live with arthritis or a form of arthritis yourself. Could you describe a little bit about what that's like day to day?
Well, I first developed symptoms in 1991, so I've lived with arthritis for a long number of years, and the symptoms and problems have changed as time has passed. So I would say I've had different problems over the years. At the moment, I would have less pain and I would be left with problems to do with fatigue and difficulties in managing that and day-to-day difficulties with mobility and small amount of inflammation, but not too much pain at the moment.
And not too much pain at the moment. And would you see, when you look back to 1991, what was going on, or what was life like for Anna at that point? What were you doing, or what stage of life were you at that stage?
Well, I developed symptoms before I was diagnosed. It took a good hard year of crying on the phone, looking for outpatients appointments and going from Billy to Jack to find out what was wrong. And eventually I got a diagnosis in 1991, just before I started a course as a mature student in Trinity studying social work. So my life was turned upside down by the symptoms and by the problems I had and the pain I had. I was also parenting a very young child at the time. So life was tough, but I wanted to do the course. It was something I had kind of targeted and was going to change my life and develop a career for myself. So I kind of plodded on, but it was a bit chaotic.
It was very chaotic, and I'd imagine a young child, it's chaotic enough, never mind anything else that was coming with it. And how did that impact on your, you said you had probably more pain back then, so would that have been the main symptom that you were trying to manage and to deal with, or were there other things that impacted on your day-to-day life?
Well, pain was one, and difficulties with mobility, difficulty with grip. I had Raynaud's, so I had difficulty with cold and like my feet moving when they got cold. I've found things like lifting a small child difficult. Even things like, I can remember I was living in rented accommodation at the time at a coal fire. I couldn't lift the shovel. I used to have to pick the pieces of coal into a plastic bag and then drag the plastic bag and whoosh it onto the fire. So those kind of things. And then even things like being able to close your buttons on your clothes, lift up jeans, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're almost, in some cases, many would say not mundane possibly would be a word to use, but they're day-to-day tasks that we do find difficult and sometimes impossible. But then there are other things that we do to overcome those challenges that we face.
Well, one of the things, one of the kind of, suppose, the good things that happened at that time was becoming a student in Trinity. There was help available to me, and I was very supported in college, not just as a mature student, but as somebody who had difficulty, or it wasn't totally defined as a disability at that stage, but I would have been helped. I was allowed to do my exams on a computer. I didn't have to grip a pen. I was able to type away. Generally, with difficulties I had, I was supported if I was out. If I was unwell, plenty of other students helped me with notes, which was great. And also the college was sympathetic to time off.
Okay, so you were given that support. And Jane, if I could turn to you, I see you nodding along there as Anna is giving us her story and describing what she went through. Are these the type of things that people would come to see you as an occupational therapist about on a regular basis?
Absolutely, yeah. So in occupational therapy, our main goal is to enable people to participate in those day-to-day occupations. We call it occupations, but we mean by that is all of the day-to-day tasks that make up your routine. It can be for the very practical things, like Anna mentioned, of getting dressed, showered, managing things around the house, getting out and about, engaging in college, or it might be work, and also doing the things that we want to do for enjoyment, so your leisure routines and social activities. So it's really, we look at everything that a person needs to be able to do and they want to be able to do. And we look at how their condition is impacting on their ability to do those things. And then really work individually with the person to identify ways to modify a task, to manage the task better, maybe use a piece of equipment or an aid to help. Or it might just be about looking at changing up the routine to better pace yourself, better manage the pain, the fatigue, and there's a lot of associated stress that comes with managing a condition like arthritis. So we play a role there as well.
And if you look at that and that kind of patient-centered focus, the kind of holistic look at life in general, is occupational therapy almost the aim that we the aspiration that we should be looking for when it comes to all healthcare professionals and when approaching people living with arthritis?
Yeah, I mean, I think across all health professionals, most health professionals will aim to have sort of this biopsychosocial approach to looking at managing a condition. It's not just the physical aspects. You're considering how the person is coping emotionally, psychologically, and then, you know, what's their social support or environment as well. So really, I think you just can't separate your physical and mental well-being, as Anna described, just the impact that it can have on you emotionally. So, you know, and basically based on that, it's going to impact on how you participate in your day-to-day routines. If you're not able to do the practical things like getting showered and dressed in the morning, that's going to be frustrating, and it's going to impact on your mood and anxiety levels. So you can't just separate, you know, one from the other.
Okay, and how would people living with arthritis how do we access the OT services?
So if you're currently under a rheumatologist or under a rheumatology team, you can just ask for a referral to the occupational therapist on the team. If for any reason there isn't an OT on the team, you can access occupational therapy privately, and there'd be a list of occupational therapists on the AOTI website, which is the Association for Occupational Therapists in Ireland. You can also access OTs through your local health centre, and you can again request a referral through your GP or just through the local health centre, and they would be the primary care occupational therapists who come out to the house and visit you in your home as well.
And Anna, you described how things have kind of changed for you now, where the symptoms have changed, the things that impact you are quite different. But you described how those day-to-day tasks were so difficult at the beginning. How do you find those day-to-day tasks now? Would they still impact you in a similar way?
Well, I suppose my diagnosis has changed. It kind of started as rheumatoid arthritis, and then I was kind of re-diagnosed or rebranded as lupus. And then in 2015, when I was working away, or 14, I developed another range of symptoms that put me more in the area, kind of scleroderma type symptoms that put me more in the area of mixed connective tissue disease. So I've kind of, the whole disease process has changed. It's moved sideways instead of just, you know, moving in one particular direction with one particular aspect of it. So as those changes occurred, differences occurred in terms of the condition and the problems that that occurred. But I suppose now I have retired. At the time, prior to retirement, I was very much in the mode of working and then coming home and being on the couch, or not being able for much more, not being able to pursue interests, not being able to meet friends. All my energy was going into work. So when the time came, I took the opportunity and retired early, and my life did change because of, you know, I had more energy to put into other more enjoyable or sociable things.
Yeah, and that definitely makes a difference for those of us living with any chronic condition to be able to have that time to focus on the condition and to manage it well and to be able to do those things that we enjoy. Did you, at any stage throughout your journey, did you engage with the occupational therapy services yourself, or was this something that you learned to adapt as you went through?
No, I did have a referral to physio and occupational therapy in the hospital, in Beaumont Hospital, when I was involved there. And that was very helpful. I needed splints for my hands. I needed aids for opening things like cartons and jars and, advice just on how to manage things. So certainly I do support anybody who's got a condition and they're having difficulties with their emotional response to it, or their psychological coping, or their practical activities of daily living, to make contact and reach out to a multidisciplinary team. I think Jane was saying that a lot of the professionals all have the same approach in terms of they see you as a whole person and not just one particular issue to do with them, and have a kind of psychosocial approach. But there's plenty of support there if you seek it. And when you go first to your appointments, and when you're diagnosed first, you're naturally, your own focus is on, first of all, managing the condition. A lot of people are in cure mode. I have to sort this out, get it cured and get on with things, put it behind me. And then you're just trying to cope and focus on pain reduction and pain management. But when that settles down a bit, there are other areas that will help you when you learn how to cope psychologically and emotionally, when you engage with other people and all those professions. If you're in a public system particularly, there's generally a multidisciplinary team available in a hospital. And if you feel you're not coping, just say, look, do you have a social worker? Do you have a psychologist? I'd like to have a chat with somebody. You don't have to be at rock bottom to ask for help and to discuss the impact of a new diagnosis.
So Jane, if I turn to you there once again, Anna has described how the symptoms can fluctuate over a number of years, the disease path can change and the symptoms and how the impact can change. Would you be advocating for people to, on a regular basis or consistently, engage with occupational therapy?
Yes, I would absolutely encourage that. We see people at all stages of their condition, from early diagnosis right through to people who've been living with it for many years. And we'd always encourage, say we see a person initially and they've got a new diagnosis, we might finish up with them after six sessions or so, but always encourage them to re-refer if there's any changing need. They may need to get their splints reviewed. They may need to re-look at how they're functioning in day-to-day. They may have a new situation with their work or with their day-to-day life that they need to re-evaluate things and get further guidance. Also, when a person experiences a flare or a setback, that's always a time that they might need more support. So we would say, some people are with us for many years and check in maybe on a yearly basis or get re-referred from their team back to us.
Okay, so it is something that we need to do and to be aware of, and it's all part of our self-management in the wider sense. And if I could turn to you and go back to something that you mentioned earlier about retiring early, taking advantage of the things that you enjoy and doing those things you enjoy, and something that I know you're very, very passionate about and also very good at is your writing and things like that. Where did that come from, or is that always something that was at the back of your mind that you wanted to explore?
Well, I suppose during post-retirement and during COVID, I benefited from the revolution in Zoom communications. And unlike people who found it difficult having to use it as a work tool, and I was able to use it for leisure and pleasure. So COVID was a difficult time. People with autoimmune diseases were very afraid. And I was able to take to things like yoga. My yoga course went online. It was a very nice yoga teacher put it on online free 3 mornings a week. So I was able to keep my kind of anxiety about COVID and life and what was going on in check. I also discovered a great dance class through Zoom called Well Dance with Dance Theatre Ireland, which is fantastic exercise and creative expression. And then I hit on a few courses that were to do with personal development and health issues and healthy living. Then one of the things I did was the Arthritis Ireland Behind the Pain course. And at the same time, I stumbled on a writing course. When I did the Behind the Pain course, I heard from a lot of the participants, and it's something that I've heard before with other people who suffer from arthritis and in different support groups, the issue of fatigue and the problems it presents for people and how they're perceived by other people, their families, partners. It was a kind of coming back all the time. So I just was kind of inspired at that time just to say, you know, there has to be some way of explaining this and writing it. So I just wrote it down when I was doing that course, Behind the Pain. And it was an okay piece of writing. I gave it to the other course participants who I was in a little WhatsApp group with, and they thought, This was really great. Can we share it? And so I knew I'd kind of hit on something that resonated and was true to people. But I put it in a drawer because it wasn't written properly. It wasn't good enough for any publication. And then randomly, I found out online that a friend of mine was doing a writing course called Anne McDonald. And I jumped onto that course and she pushed me over a creative cliff. And one of the first things I did was finish my piece called The Phone Theory.
And I've read The Phone Theory, and our listeners will be able to hear it alongside this podcast. But if we look at it, it's one of the difficulties that we as people living with arthritis have always struggled to do, is to effectively explain to friends and family what it's like to live with arthritis. And I think that's the one thing that you've encapsulated within this piece, is using battery on smartphones as a way to explain it. And it really gets to the effect of all the different drains, the various apps that we have on our phones that drain our energy throughout the day. And was it just a moment of inspiration? Is it something that you've been thinking of for a time? Or I'm fascinated as to where this came from.
Well, I suppose it was listening to other people, and the expression was used a few times, like, you know, just run out of battery really quickly. And it just kind of I got a bit of inspiration from that. You know, I think you can kind of feel the frustration and the hurt that's behind the lack of understanding that comes across maybe from friends and family. And sometimes that is perceived by us. It's not real. We might think, oh, they think I'm lazy or unreliable because I can't turn up to this. And, you know, at times I felt like that myself, but it is hard for others to understand, but it's hard for us to understand. Like, how come one minute you can, you know, run up the stairs and grab something and go back down the stairs, and then the next day you trudge up the stairs and you literally have to have a rest at the top of it? There's no rhyme or reason to it, and it's difficult for us and for other people, but it's a constant issue for people. And, you know, that it's clinical fatigue that we suffer from. There's no correlation between the activity and the fatigue, you know, no correlation between the activity we're doing and the fatigue. So I thought I hit on something, and I think it kind of struck a chord with a lot of people.
It certainly does, and it certainly did with myself, and I know it does. If we look at it from an occupational therapy point of view, Jane, is it something that you can see aspects of and a way of explaining to people and putting forward that idea of the unpredictability almost of life with arthritis?
Yes, it is. I think it's great. We would use sometimes the spoon theory in our practice, or different metaphors to help explain the symptoms. But I think the phone theory is a lovely updated version of that, modernized. People can relate to it. And what I love about it is the link between the apps and the activities. You know, so you can have the dressing app or the washing app. And so it kind of helps people to relate energy supply with activity as well. And I know you were saying there, Anna, that the lack of link, there's no link between the activity and fatigue. But I suppose we would always say that there are ways to manage the fatigue by looking at your activities as well. So it's kind of empowering people to, first of all, look at what their day is like. You know, some people don't even think about what they're doing in their day and how that might influence their fatigue. So there's the fatigue that's related to the disease, the inflammation. But then sometimes how much we do and or how little we do does influence our energy levels. So first of all, understanding that there are different activities that will give us or draw from our energy, first of all, is a starting point. And then, you know, so we would often say use an activity diary for a couple of days, maybe a week or so, or use an activity tracker to identify what you're doing and then to be able to say how much energy that's used, how fatigued I am, how much pain I'm in, and then be able to kind of problem solve and look at, okay, well, can I do that slightly differently? Could I break up my activity a bit more? Could I incorporate better pacing techniques into my routine or plan it out a little bit better? So I suppose it's, you know, first of all, you need a language to describe it to help to explain to others. And then using something like this tool, it can help you then start better planning and pacing out your routine so that you can feel a little bit more in control of that. And there is good evidence to say that when you reorganize your day, better pace, that you can you can have a positive influence on your energy levels, on your pain.
And better outcomes is all we're looking for, really, at the end of the day. And there are a couple of things mentioned there, Anna, by Jane, things like the activity log and pacing and things like that. They are certain ways we can almost outsmart arthritis. Is there anything that you have incorporated into your day-to-day life or into your activity that you would say and could pass on to people as ways to outsmart arthritis?
Well, I think one of the things is that when you look at something like all the issues that are outlined in the voluntary are activities of daily life and the options we have the same options and choices as everybody else, but we just can't avail of as many of them in the one day as other people. So it's about prioritising. Like, for example, today I have to pick up a ticket in the National Library of Ireland, and I was kind of saying, now I could get in there early and I could do that and then I'll go and do the podcast. But I just said, hey, priority is the podcast, cut the other thing out, go and do it another day, because I could have ended up just coming here and being tired, worn out, you know, from the first activity. So prioritising activities and is important, and not only in terms of prioritising activities in terms of chores, but prioritising things that are fun. You know, sometimes you might, instead of, oh, I have to get all that housework done or all that ironing done or whatever, stand back from that and saying, you know, could I do something nice for myself or do something with the kids? It doesn't always have to be prioritising in terms of chores, you know, and manage your own activity levels and within the context of being able to have fun and a fulfilling life and pleasure, as well as taking all the chores of life, jobs.
Yeah, and that's it. How often do we fit in the reading a book app or the sitting listening to music app or anything like that into our apps?
Yeah, interestingly, Anne McDonald, that writer, gave us an exercise on a course we did and what you wrote down at the end of the day was not what list of what you have to do tomorrow, not a list of what you haven't done today, but a list of what you have done today, what you've achieved. And sometimes with arthritis, we know that it's an achievement to get out of bed, to get up, washed and dressed, to get the kids out of school and maybe just, you know, provide a basic meal. And that's, we should recognise that and not be focused on what we can't do, what we haven't done. Mm.
That's a lovely point to bring up, and it's almost something that we could really, if we could tell that to those who are newly diagnosed, if you could say that to the woman in 1991 who was just diagnosed, Anna, would that be something that would have been taken on board, or would that have been dismissed at that point when you were newly diagnosed?
Probably not. I probably wouldn't have listened to myself. But I'm coming from this from the point of view of a completely different era in terms of medicine and what was available in solutions for people in terms of medical and pain management and understanding. Like even at the time in 1996, where I was diagnosed with lupus, it was a devastating diagnosis, and people didn't even, most people hadn't heard of it, even within the health profession. It was only, being discovered. So, it's what's happening today is completely different than from what happened to me in 1991. But I can tell you, I have been that soldier, whatever soldier, I have been, the experience of denial, non-compliance of medication, having an unhealthy lifestyle, and just generally ranting against the unfairness of having this condition, and doing everything I can, to get annoyed and angry about it. And at the end of the day, the biggest thing I've done to help myself is to accept that condition. And if you accept the fact that you have it and that you're going to live with it as best you can and work around it, that acceptance leads to a lot of solutions.
And that's what we're looking for, really, is solutions. And Jane, if I could give you the last word, is there anything that you would, as an occupational therapist or looking at the holistically at the person living with arthritis, what would you tell that newly diagnosed person to do?
I think, first of all, just acknowledging that there are going to be this range of emotions involved when you're newly diagnosed. Some people can feel really relieved that they have a name to this, condition that's been impacting on them. Some people can feel really angry, and that's going to change, or anxious. So I think it's just being kind to yourself, being patient, and knowing that this is normal in your response to dealing with a new diagnosis. And then I think, as Anna said, when you come to a certain point when you're ready to make some changes and to manage this and to work alongside it rather than completely against it, you can start to integrate some really practical things to manage your arthritis. So, at home, it might be about, the practical things of using, say, heat modalities or ice and managing the pain. It might be about using compression or splints, but also looking at how you use your joints in everyday life. So learning about what we call joint protection. And joint protection is not just about kind of wrapping yourself up in cotton wool and avoiding using your hands. It's just being a bit more mindful about how you position your joints in everyday tasks. So it might be like that, using an aid to put less pressure through your joints, or it might be breaking up your activities so you're not doing it all in the one go. And also, I suppose, tuning into how you are, as I say, emotionally. So if there is a lot of stress, we know that tension and stress makes pain worse. So trying to look at that and be open to trying out new techniques around relaxation, even trying attention focus in the body, and different relaxation strategies that can help bring down the level of pain. So there are many things you can incorporate, but I think it's acknowledging, first of all, where are you in terms of, dealing with the diagnosis, and what supports can you get around you to help you start making those changes, getting referred to your team members and linking them with Arthritis Ireland, and, because you're not alone. And I think a lot of people feel very isolated when they're first diagnosed. Most people haven't heard of different types of inflammatory arthritis. They just think it's something, that you get when you're older. So there's that lack of understanding, which we talked about. So, and I suppose the other things that are important to say is just considering, getting moving and doing fun things. Like Anna said, trying to find space for enjoyment within all of that, and to be kind and patient with yourself.
Can I just add in that over the past 31 years, having arthritis, most of the things that I worried about and most of the things I stressed about and was afraid of concerning my condition, they never happened. So I spent all that time, and those issues never materialized. And then on the other hand, some wonderful things and some great experiences that I never would have envisaged for myself have happened. So just, you know, get on with things and live in the moment and make the best of what you have.
And I think on that positive note, I think we can draw this conversation to a close. I really appreciate you both giving your time to us here on Inflammation Nation. To Jane Brownlee, Senior Occupational Therapist in the Rheumatology Service in Nace General Hospital, and to Anna Lira, who is the author of The Phone Theory, which will be used to explain the fatigue and the lack of energy that comes to with arthritis to so many people, and will be invaluable, I'm sure, to many of our listeners. Thank you very much indeed to both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
As we have been discussing on this episode of Inflammation Nation, here's Anna O'Leary reading her Phone Theory.
The fatigue and lack of energy that comes with arthritis, lupus, and other autoimmune conditions can be difficult to understand, including for the person who has it. I like to explain it in this way. Imagine that our energy levels are like mobile phones. You have the Well Plus model and I have the inflamed model. Both phones need to be charged overnight. We both have the same apps. The getting out of bed app, the dressing app, the cooking app, the working app, the shopping app, the driving app, the walking app. All the activities of daily living have an app on both phones. The app on the inflamed phone uses more battery up than the Well Plus phone, even though we are using the same apps for our daily activities. One of the most frustrating things about the inflamed phone is that the battery use changes all the time. Like one day it takes 2% of batteries to walk up the stairs. Another day it might take 7%. We cannot predict the usage. The Well Plus phone also has a smart charger. If extra battery life is needed for a special app, like the going to a party app or attending a meeting app, it can get a quick recharge. Great feature, but not installed on the inflamed phone. Sure, we try to conserve the battery by keeping app usage to a minimum, especially if we have something special coming up. It helps sometimes, but not always. The inflamed phone does have one unique feature. It's an app that runs in the background, switching itself on and off. It's the pain app that seeps a lot of energy from the battery. If there was any way we could fix our phone, we would. If there was a new charger for the inflamed phone, we would buy it. If we could reconfigure our phone, we would. If we could upgrade, we would. If we could switch off the pain app, we would. This is part of the daily challenge for people like me. Be kind and patient with us and our inflamed phones with the crappy battery. Arthritis, it's a pain in the app.
That's all from this episode of Inflammation Nation. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Stitcher, or as they always say, wherever you get your podcasts. For further information about arthritis, you can visit our website, arthritisireland.ie, or contact our helpline on 0818 252 846. See you next time. Inflammation Nation is supported by Pfizer.